As we just heard in the news, the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire is now home to the largest collection of Robert Frost works and materials outside of the East Coast, thanks to a private donation from a Milwaukee woman.
The collection includes all kinds of work from and about the poet, and there's some rare stuff in there that's sure to attract the attention of Frost scholars and budding poets.
Later in the program, we'll talk with the Poet Laureate of Wisconsin about Frost's legacy and continuing impact in the world of poetry. First, we welcome in Greg Kokin to tell us more about this collection. Greg is head of special collections at University Archives and records management at UW-Eau Claire. Greg, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon, Veronica and Rob. Great to be here.
So, Greg, first off, we got to ask, as the archive guy there, are you totally geeking out about having this collection in your hands?
Oh, I think anybody would be geeking out with a collection of this stature. You know, I get to work with a lot of great rare materials, but truthfully, on a day-to-day basis, nothing comes close to what I get to work with this collection.
Well, give us the story here. How did this East Coast poet end up having this connection with someone in Wisconsin and these archives ending up here?
Well, Frederick Schmidt, who really organized this collection, began collecting first editions of American authors while he was in high school in Shorewood, Wisconsin. And he eventually went off to Dartmouth, where he met Chief Librarian Harold Rugg. And it was there that Rugg really encouraged Schmidt in his collecting and also helped encourage him to focus his collecting. And so after that, he was looking at Faulkner and Hemingway and Steinbeck and, of course, Robert Frost. And it was while he was there in 1942 that Harold Rugg introduced Schmidt to Robert Frost. And the two kind of hit it off. They started a relationship together and would often take long walks on the Dartmouth campus. And it was from there that their relationship continued to grow and his interest in Robert Frost poetry and books continued to grow as well. And then over time, the collection just became really this amazing selection of works by Robert Frost and rare items in Robert Frost's hand. And it was through some connections that we were able to meet Miss Joan Christofferson Schmidt, and we began the journey together to see this collection acquired by the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Foundation.
And do I have this right? You already had a Robert Frost collection going there.
We did have some Robert Frost items in our collection already, some first editions of his works. Of course, nothing in comparison to what we have here in this collection now.
Well, give us a taste. What is in this collection that you're just unveiling?
Well, there's really three distinct components to this collection. There's the books authored by Robert Frost, the books which are about Robert Frost and about his poetry, and then there are those manuscript items, those rare materials that are in Frost's own hand. There's a total of 45 books authored by Robert Frost. Nearly all of those are rare first editions or limited editions. And of those, 22 are actually signed and inscribed by Robert Frost. When he would inscribe one of those books, he would frequently write a few lines of poetry inside the book. I should point out that one of the special components of that collection is a 1916 first edition copy of Frost's book Mountain Interval. It was in that book which Frost wrote his full poem One Step Backward Taken, and he dated it April 15, 1946 from Dartmouth College, New Hampshire. That poem would actually be published the next year, and as we've learned from the donor in our conversations with her, that poem was actually written about Fred Schmidt while he was in the service and his time.
It's amazing not just to have the materials, but to have the story behind them be part of the legacy here.
Absolutely, and we want to be able to share that story as well. We consider that all part of understanding this collection.
What are some of the most interesting things you've seen written, as you've mentioned, in Robert Frost's own hand as you've started to come to grips with this collection?
I think one of the most amazing things is when you get to see pages from Robert Frost's notebook and you see the original poetry that has been written in his hand. And in some of the cases, you can actually see that he's crossing off words and crossing off lines and he's rewriting components. It allows you to really see inside the mind of Robert Frost and understand his poetry on a deep level.
So really the work's in progress there.
Yeah, in a way, you get to see the process of the author.
So apart from the coolness factor of this, what is the scholarly value? What are Frost students, Frost researchers going to get when they take a gander at what you've got there?
You know, I think you can find a lot of Robert Frost poetry online. What we are able to present in this collection is the Robert Frost poetry in its original format, the way it was first published. When I look at a rare book or an item within this collection, there are a lot of factors that I'll look at. It's not just the words on the page. It's the binding style. It's the weight of the paper. It's the style of the paper. It's the way the words appear on the page. All of that is really encompassed in the poetry. And when I work with students on campus who are going to explore this collection, I want them to be able to think critically about everything that they're looking at in order to reach a deeper understanding of Robert Frost's poetry, much in the same way I've come to appreciate him more just by processing and looking at this collection.
Now that you've got all this material, I imagine you'd like to preserve it for a good long time. What are some of the challenges in taking these kind of materials and keeping them intact for generations to come?
Well, within McIntyre Library's Special Collections and Archives Department, we want to balance preservation with access. Ultimately, it's important to be able to get these materials in the hands of researchers, but equally important to preserve it so that it's around for hundreds of years. We have a climate-controlled storage facility where we maintain stable temperature and humidity year-round, and we've also been able to build custom-built phase boxes for each of the rare books in that collection. Those phase boxes will actually further protect those books. They'll already be in that great climate-controlled environment, but even some of the elements that we don't think about frequently, like dust and light, they can have a very damaging effect on materials, and those phase boxes will help protect them even further.
You mentioned preservation and access. What is access going to be like? Can anyone in the public see some of the materials, or is there just kind of scholarly access? How does that work?
No, everyone in the public is absolutely welcome to come visit us and to view this collection. Everything we have within Special Collections and Archives, well, I should say most everything we have, is open to the public. And I encourage the public to be able to take advantage of the resources that we have there.
I can tell you're very proud of having this there. What does this collection mean to UW-Eau Claire?
This is truly a signature collection for UW-Eau Claire. It helps to really mark our university as a premier institution for undergraduate learning and research. And a collection like this just builds upon that reputation and hopefully helps attract some scholars from around the world to be able to come here, explore this collection, and help them to better understand Frost as well.
And you've worked with Joan Christofferson Schmidt, who donated these materials. How important was it for her to have them stay in Wisconsin in particular?
When I first met her and we first had a conversation, that was one of the things that she made very clear. They had such a strong, her and her husband had such a strong connection with Wisconsin, and she really wanted to see this collection stay in Wisconsin. She did not want the collection to go to the highest bidder at a public auction. She really wanted it to stay in the state, and she wanted people to actually learn and utilize this collection, to appreciate the relationship between Robert Frost and Frederick Schmidt and nature. And so she was really looking for a home which would be able to encompass all of her goals and wishes. And hopefully UW-Eau Claire is going to be that home, and we can continue to honor those wishes for hundreds of years into the future.
Well, I hope I can get by for a visit sometime. Greg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Greg Kokin. He's head of special collections at University Archives and Records Management at UW-Eau Claire.
After the break, we'll talk with the Poet Laureate of Wisconsin about the life and legacy of Robert Frost.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We just spoke with Greg Kokin about a new collection at UW-Eau Claire of Robert Frost books and materials, and we'll pick up that conversation and talk more about the life and legacy of Robert Frost with the Poet Laureate of Wisconsin, Max Garland. He's also a professor of English at UW-Eau Claire. Max, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So what was your first reaction when you found out about this collection?
I was very excited about it. And I tried to talk everyone I could into understanding the value of having something like this and preserving it and keeping it all of together. I think when I was very young, the first thing I knew about poetry, the first thing I knew about living poetry was watching television when Robert Frost came on at the inauguration of John F. Kennedy. That's the first time I knew there was such a thing as a living poet. Mm. Frost became, really, for a lot of us, both writers, people who went into the academic world, and to the general public, sort of the living embodiment of the poet, the only really popular poet of the 20th century in many ways, and the only poet I think you could say in the 20th or maybe even now that you could be in a room anywhere and be pretty sure that someone in that room knew some poems, some lines by Frost. And so that, to me, he was my first initiation into poetry, what a poet looked like, what a poet sounded like, and what poetry was really for.
I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, we don't have to memorize poetry as much in school anymore, but back in the day, you really did. You had to have a poem or two under your belt, and these days it is most likely to be Robert Frost, maybe stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening, that people may know. What is it about his poetry, do you think, that is so accessible and that people hold so dear?
I think, for one thing, it's very descriptive. You can tell when you read a poem or hear a poem by Frost, stopping by Woods, or even some of the longer narrative poems of his, that this is someone who observed the world very carefully. And so he uses his observation of the world, very often the natural world, but also the world of human interactions as well, in a way that helps convey what might be the deeper or the more complex emotions under whatever the subject of that poem may be. He uses colloquial speech very often. He uses what sometimes is very obvious and what sometimes is more subtle form and rhyme that we associate with poetry. And he also has layers of meaning under that. So on the surface, you realize there's something that attracts you to the poem, what it's about, the subject, the setting. But then you can read it 50 years later and you can understand that there was another level of meaning under that as well.
There's one poem in particular in this collection that's really of interest because of the new context we see it in, the new information that the collection has given us. It's called One Step Backward Taken. What can you tell us about this poem?
Yeah, it's a poem that Frost talked about many times. He talked about various motives for writing it. But it came out at a time just about the end of World War II. And it, for a lot of people, not only had a personal meaning, but had a larger cultural context, in that there was a world that very often saw itself on the brink of possible catastrophe. It was also written right at the birth of the atomic age, in which for the first time we understood that this catastrophe could not only involve nations but the planet as well. And so that idea of one step backward taken, stepping back from the brink, became something that was important for people to contemplate. In the personal connection, the fact that Joan Christofferson Schmidt had and really kept to herself for a long time, that there was a personal narrative concerning her own husband in this poem, is also another layer to it. But I think that's the interesting thing about poetry and about Frost's poetry. There are specific motives for a particular poem, but you don't even have to know those motives to understand and to relate to that poem. They have, first of all, a specificity, but then a wider circle of universal application.
One of the surprising things about this collection, I guess, first of all, that it exists at all, but then also that it was this connection, this friendship between this young man, he was a college student, and this venerable poet at Dartmouth at the time. Does that tell you anything new about Frost's character, that he had this friendship with this kid who was really not anybody important, anybody that a big poet should have bothered with?
It certainly makes you think about the small connections in a life that may have long, long implications. I know as a teacher and as a writer, sometimes you feel that, you know, you don't see the results of your influence. You think that, you know, you talk about poetry, you read poems, and sometimes you wonder about the importance of it. But thinking about this many, many years later, what this meant to this young man and why someone of Frost's stature took the time to talk to and befriend someone from whom he had nothing to gain is also, yes, it does give me insight into Frost, because Frost, among other things, was very, very cognizant of his reputation. His image in the public was something that he worked on and calculated. He came to his prime in the age of television, the first, you know, major poet to do so. And so that was something that was a concern to him. So it does, it's interesting to me to know that there was also this private side that he could not have known would have a larger legacy.
Well, while Frost's poems aren't about Wisconsin per se, there are connections that you can make between his work and Wisconsin ideas of conservation, sustainability, interest in the environment, the kind of thing championed by Aldo Leopold. Can you tease that out for us a little bit, that connection?
Well, I know during the part of the earlier interview with Greg, one of the first things that was said was, how did the poems of this New England poet, this Northeastern poet, you know, get to be here, this collection? And while that is an image we associate with Frost, Frost was born in San Francisco. He taught in Michigan. He lived for a time in Florida, and he had his first books published while he lived in England. He is a quintessentially American poet. And I think reading the New England poems, the snow poems, the spring poems, the after apple picking poem of Frost, it doesn't take a great leap for those of us in Wisconsin to relate to those poems. And I think Aldo Leopold is a good name to bring up here too, because one of the things that Frost observed very carefully and looked at with not only a sentimental and not only positive emotional way, but with a cold eye, he looked at the natural world and he observed it and he drew from it human lessons and human wisdom in the same way that Leopold did.
Now, in the story about this collection, you described Robert Frost as a poet of the people. And when I think about his poetry, I don't know nearly as much about it as you do, but I think about the natural world, the aspects of him observing the world around, and they don't always involve people. So why is he a poet of the people?
Well, you know, that's something interesting. In an interview with Frost that I read recently, he was asked a question something like this, and he claimed that there were only two of his poems that didn't have people in them. Now, I haven't gone back over all of Frost to see if that's true or not, because Frost also was very contradictory and somewhat pugnacious in some of his interviews. So I'm not sure about that. But when you do look at them, if it's there are even the implications in something like Stopping by Woods. He thinks about staying in that woods, but there are promises to keep at the end of it that draw him back, by implication, promises to people. And a lot of those poems that we think are all about nature, there's also an implication of a human community hovering in the background.
In the poetry world, there has been a lot that has happened since Robert Frost. Lots of different styles have become popular, and we've seen different poets rise to national consciousness. In that context, how important is he today?
I think he's very important today. He is a poet that became a popular poet. He sort of stands for, he has an image of someone we can point to as having a role as an artist in the culture, in the society itself. We have ways of judging the value and the heritage of a culture, of a state, of a nation. Frost and someone with a public stature in the arts like that reminds us that it's not just the economic clout of a state, it's not just the military clout of a nation, but it's also the content of the character and the depth of insight of those of the people within that state. And I think having an artist with a national voice such as Frost is a good reminder of that. Also, the natural world that he observed so closely and drew wisdom from is still with us. It is still something that we are interdependent upon. And again, our own Aldo Leopold talked about that community, and I think we have not drawn all of the lessons and all of the wisdom and from nature that are there to be drawn.
in the collection that is now at UW-Eau Claire, it's not just the poetry in the first editions, it's handwritten notes and some cards that Robert Frost wrote to Fritz, his friend here in Wisconsin. Have you learned anything new about his poetic voice or even just the way he thinks about the world or about poetry based on some of those handwritten notes?
Well, what I've learned so far, and I haven't spent as much time as I want to spend with the collection myself, but what I've learned is how consciously and how seriously he took the role of poet as really his. I mean, he did some farming, he did some teaching, but a poet was his calling and his vocation, and he took that very seriously, whether it was sending out holiday cards in limited editions signed with small poems or pieces of poems on them, keeping track of the various editions of his own poetry. He really took it as a calling, and he was a poet in his private interactions, in his wider public role, and that to me is very interesting.
As we wind up this interview, we talked earlier about quoting poetry and how, you know, lots of people still know some Robert Frost. Do you have some favorite lines of Robert Frost that you'd be willing to share with us before you go?
Wow. I should have brought a book with me. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. And those miles, some of them ended up at UW-Eau Claire. Thank you so much for joining us, Max.
Thanks for putting me on the spot.
You did beautifully. Max Garland is the Poet Laureate of Wisconsin. He's also a professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire.